Welcome to episode 13 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley. And on today's episode, I'm joined by Ray Akjar Jr., a friend, local historian, mechanic, and basically a regional volunteer extraordinaire. Ray is one of those rare combinations of ambulance driver and firefighter, and his wife and he also volunteer on Sharon Park and Rec and many other things. So welcome, Ray. I'm so happy that you could be here today.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
So to set the table, several years ago, Jeff Dixon, who is the owner of Dixon Orthodontics here in Sharon, that's at the Hamlin House on Upper Main Street, told me that his true passion was metal detecting. And so he knew that I would know where to look, and so he asked me where we can go and do some exploring. So I figured it was best to start slow and, you know, work areas that I knew that we could. So we explored the lower level of my parents' farm in Goshen, and we found a lot of interesting things. And I learned that Jeff is not only passionate about metal detecting, but he's very, very good at it. So I called Ray because Ray owns a property in Sharon Valley, affectionately known as Nanny's House. And I figured that given the valley's historic past that we'd find some cool stuff, and we did. A lot of family-related stuff, a couple of coins. But then the item that ties to this episode is what we found last. I was in the backyard working with my metal detector, and Jeff was over by the right side of the driveway when he just lets out this, like, loud yelp. And I had headphones on, but I could still hear him. And I immediately stopped and just started heading his way quick. And he's, like, beyond excited. He's convinced that below the surface is either Nanny's buried treasure or, like, perhaps a Hotchkiss shell. So we start digging and digging, and then we hit a tree root, and we had to figure out how to cut that because we didn't really have that tools to do that. And then we dig some more, and then Jeff does, like, one more swipe, and he's like, it's right here, right here. So we start digging with our hands, and we found it. It was a perfectly preserved 1970s bicycle tire. And when I told Ray, he laughed and said, that's from Boo Boo. He was a local bike mechanic. So this begins the episode. So Ray, for starters, who were Nanny and Boo Boo?
So Boo Boo was my great-grandfather. He was born in 1903 on Christmas Day, and Nanny was his daughter, and that's my mother's mother.
And I presume that Nanny and Boo Boo were not their real names?
No, definitely not. She's named Dorothy, and he was Noel. Obviously, something to do with the Christmas birth, I would imagine.
Right. And what did he do before he became this local bike mechanic?
He worked for the state of Connecticut, and he was a truck driver, laborer.
And where was the state garage? We're now on Bunker Hill there in Cornwall, but where was his station out of at that moment?
No. So it was much more local. It was where, across from the Legion Hall on New Street in Sharon, down behind the Anderson's house, there's a little two-car garage with a kind of a carport built off to the side, and that's where they kept the trucks.
Wow. And what did he do there? Was he a mechanic like you were?
Probably. He was quite handy. So I think at that point in time, they didn't just have a specific mechanic, so he would have worked on the trucks, driven the trucks, done all the, you know, handwork, shovels. They didn't have big machines back then, so... And especially one of the very, very outlying satellite stations, they wouldn't have any of that stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah,
no. So they had picks and shovels and probably an old dump truck and whatever. That was it.
Do you know where his winter run was?
Oh, yeah, he did Ellsworth, which is pretty much above the Autobahn on Route 4. That's where the snow line is, so it's pretty ugly up there.
So their house was right before the bridge heading towards Veterans Field, right?
Yeah, 11th Sharon Station Road. So right, the house that borders the bridge and the river.
And so basically we found a lot of the information about the topic in this 1972 article that was in the Waterbury Sunday Republican. And the,
right.
It refers to the local dump. So where was that at this moment?
So directly across the street, there's a driveway that goes up, and it's where the Sharon Valley Iron Company had their iron furnace. And if you went up around where the charging bridge would have been, there was a dump up there. The town dump was there.
All right, so it's just right up the hill from him, and then the bridge goes through. Okay. All right. So the garage itself, was it huge?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I guess
maybe
just back up a second. So when do you think he started, becoming a mechanic or a bike mechanic rather?
Well, as my mother had told me, and the article reads, she asked him for a bicycle because he retired from the state. He was actually in a sanitarium. He had tuberculosis, and my grandmother had tuberculosis. And so my mom went to live with some of her relatives. And when she came back, she was about six, came back and asked them to build her a bicycle. And he was doing, like, little odd jobs and scrap metal and things. So when he went to the dump, he found a bunch of pieces of a bicycle and put it together. But then somebody came along and bought it. So he had to build another one for her. And somebody came along and bought that one. So finally, when she finally did get her bike, it was one that he put together three or four bikes later. And he got pretty good at it by then. So he figured it would be a good retirement job.
Yeah, no, that's the fun thing. It was like, it was word-of-mouth marketing at that moment.
Oh, definitely. I doubt he advertised.
And
he didn't have to.
Like in the article, what I really like about the article is that the use of the dump seems to be like important. Apparently, I guess he used to get his parts from Sears.
Yeah,
and then
found catalog.
That thing, that Paramount Cycle and Supply out of Boston, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then they became Raleigh. They were headquartered in England, so they became Raleigh. But he bought his parts, and they came from New York City. And at one point, he was getting new bicycles through the train, but the train stopped in, I think, 1970 or 71, in the one that would stop at Sharon Station. So he had to get all his parts, like UPS. I remember UPS coming to that house as a kid. Like, you know how Amazon packages come today? His packages came all the time, like from UPS. And there weren't a lot of people buying things mail order at that point, but he certainly was.
Yeah, it sounds like from the article that he was buying them in smaller, packages just because of the cost of, trucking for the larger packages or something like that.
Right.
Now, he says kids from 15 towns. Do you think how true is that?
I don't know. Everybody I talked to knows him or knew him, got their bicycles there. When I was a kid, he passed away in 1981, but he did it right up to the end, and there were always cars from out of state, Massachusetts, New York, and certainly Connecticut, people bringing their bikes, dropping them off. And, and all the Valley kids, it was like every day was summer vacation was crazy because we hung out there. We'd do tricks. We'd do wheelies up and down the road. We'd go up the dump road and come down as fast as we could and race down the dump road. And some of us would race up the dump road, which wasn't much fun. But, 15 towns worth of kids, I would believe it.
What about, so then there's this story that some kids could actually bunny hop up onto the truss of the bridge, because the bridge is
true story.
And ride across it. Is that true?
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Absolutely. Topper Brazy, Brian Brazy, trying to think, Floyd Ellis did it. I would never do it. I'm petrified of heights. So they would run across the top of that bridge, and they put boards up, they jump up on it and ride, and jump off the other side.
That's a drop. Like into the brook there. I mean that's a drop.
It's probably from the top of that truss, it's probably 30 feet. And it's not deep. It's only a foot deep, and it's all rocks. So nobody ever was injured. I don't know how.
Huh. What about his ability to create these custom bikes that we hear about? Like we, there's always this local lore about these custom bikes.
Yeah, we have them still. He took a big 26-inch cruiser bike and flipped the frame upside down. And so the cranks are on the top where the pedals go, and then made this enormous seat post and extended the handlebars. So it became then 7 feet tall. And the kids used to get on the bike. They'd get up on the side of the bridge and climb onto the bike and ride it from there and ride up and down the road. And then there was, he got an idea one day to build a bucking Bronco bike, which he built the spokes were a different length and built the wheels so that the axles were offset inside the wheel. So the wheel would go around and like an ellipse. And it was crazy because if you got the wheels out of sync, like you just go up and down, or if the front and rear were out of sync, it would like try to buck you off. I mean, it was crazy, and the kids would see how fast they could ride it, and definitely crazy times.
Now, did you ever try it?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I spent a ton of time on it. I think the funniest story I have about that is Tom Bartram took me for a ride. I was about 6 years old or something, and I begged him to take me for a bike ride, and he did, and we went down to the other end of the valley on Sharon Valley Road where it comes out on 343, and then we rode back. And I remember telling him somewhere around the Catholic cemetery that I wasn't allowed to leave the yard. So he was like, shook his head, you know, like that I had conned him into taking me. And then we went up Mutton Hill, which is the hill between the lime kiln and the state line, and rode back down. And it's quite a ride for Tom on the way back down, of course, because the thing was like out of control the whole way down and hitting him, and yeah, dangerous. But that's one of my funniest memories of those screwball bikes that he built.
What about your dad mentions chrome? What was it? What was chrome all about?
Oh, he got this like kind of cheap silver paint, and he called it chrome paint. And he would, like, these people would bring in these high-end bikes, and he would doll up their wheels and things with this, like, awful chrome paint, and it was just silver. And I'd say, oh, no, you didn't spray their wheels, did you? He's like, yeah, I re-chromed them. And he was, you know, he was a character.
And who's the guy that your dad also mentions, Tony from New York? What was Tony?
Oh, Tony. Yeah, Tony was one of those guys that whatever you wanted, he could get. No matter what. I mean, if it was produce, if it was bicycle parts, tools, anything, he'd stop by and you'd tell him what you need, and next week he'd show up with it. Lord only knows where he got it, but he'd have it. Bicycles, whatever.
So did you ever have a conversation with him about, you know, what he did, and did he ever, like, express anything about passion for it, or any memories that maybe no one else would know, like Boo Boo? I know that he mentions, you know, in the article that he really, the kids keep him company, and he really enjoys the company.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I would take from that, is he enjoyed being around the kids so much. And I can remember, you know, going in there and just, we always had a great time in there and helping him and working on the bikes with him. And, you know, you're like a 12-year-old kid trying to help the guy, and you're not helpful, no matter what you're thinking at the time. You know, it's not really helping him, but he was very patient about it. My brother and I would play cards with him at night and dice, and he would tell us stories. And I don't remember specifically any stories. It was a long time ago, but he was a character and kind of a man about town. So my father would probably have those stories, but they're probably not fit for the air.
Well, I think he planted a seed in you, because, you know, you and I, that, you know, that's a big connection for us with, you know, our love of bikes and biking and racing. And, you know, you were a sponsored racer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, at one point, a million years ago. And that was, he loved to see that passion. Bicycles for me were like freedom, and I don't know, it represented a lot of different things. And I definitely enjoyed the time I had with him, and I wish that he had lived long enough to see all the accomplishments that, like, I was able to do in bicycling. And there's a young fella across the street from my father's that's an expert level BMX racer, and he'd love that. He would really be into all that.
I like that a lot, too, because you're right. Like, you know, Chris Peterson's crossed the way, you know, known as Sparky in the BMX mm-hmm. world. But he's, you know, he travels the tri-state, you know, and he's done so well with that. And it's so interesting that it's so close to where the shop was. I think that's a cool tie-in to this entire history.
Yeah, definitely.
And just you know, in closing, you know, I think it really shows, you know, you and I do the Sharon Facebook page, and it's currently the number one topic. So we, Ray and I, posted, you know, a photo of him, which turns out to be with him and Brian Brazy, and it just immediately exploded with memories from everyone from, you know, regionally that had come to visit and had bikes fixed. And so it's like we reached like 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's relatively rare.
Definitely. And I've had people come up to me on the street.
700, 1,000. But, you know, these big items. And it just proves, you know these individuals, you know, these people that everyone knew and, you know, basically just provide us with a view of what the past was.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that
a lot of people
start. Well, the thing, this is the thing that I kind of just noticed earlier this morning. The article begins, according to a recent radio broadcast, bicycles are enjoying a boom. They're selling faster than automobiles. And I thought that was neat because, you know, we're doing a radio program here, and people are starting slowly to get back into biking. Electric bikes have been a big boom to the area, and locally, a Sharonite has started an electric bike company, started down in West Cornwall, and that got so popular that it went to Kent, and now it's up in North Canaan, too. So, yeah, we are seeing a return to biking and the love of biking, and obviously we live in a region that is perfect for it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good for the, you know, if you've done any training on the road around here, there's a lot of hills, and even when you're driving in your car, my wife and I drive around, and I say, look at this hill. She's like, yeah, it's not really a hill. No, it is. If you're on a bicycle, it started way back there, and it's still going, and, you know, the electric bicycle allows someone who doesn't train constantly to enjoy the roads and the scenery around here without having to train day in and day out to be able to do a 20-mile ride.
No, and that's true, and that's the beauty of it. That's what got me back into it was that reason. It just and the other thing that's really interesting is that the bikes, the electric bikes, are so smart that they actually have a computer on it. So you may start off using the electricity or the motor or whatever you want to call it, and then as time goes on and your strength of cadence pedaling gets better, the computer dials back its help. So a lot of people are getting back into it because they're retraining their bodies to, you know, capture or you know, basically succeed up hills, which was always a battle for myself.
Yeah, me too. I'm, I don't know what the word is.
It's the lactic acid buildup. That's the thing.
I'm not built for going up the hill. I did much better going downhill.
No doubt.
And that's,
all right, Ray,
I
appreciate you, and it was great to get this history from you, and so thanks for being here today.
All right. Thank you for having me. That's great.
And for the listeners, as we've noted, there's an email address that you can write to. It's stories@robinhoodradio.com, and just tell us, you know, what do you want to know more about? And then we'll circle back, and that's how we'll do episode after episode. So in the next episode, we welcome back Tim Abbott. It's going to be a fun conversation. And so until next time, be well and always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. And enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.